tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 7th of September, 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we had a bit of excitement over the weekend over here in Britain. There was a protest at Dover, where the illegal immigrants come in, hundreds of protesters. All dressed in black with black face masks on. At first, I wondered if it might be White Vanguard because they dress like that. But it wasn't White Vanguard. It was Danny Tomo's Patriot platform. Danny Tomo is a cousin of Tommy Robinson. He's a civic nationalist. Perhaps he may have moved a little bit further towards the right over the last couple of years, but they brought traffic to a standstill. The most interesting thing about this is that the authorities must have known about it. They must have known about it. They are bound to have had somebody that was embedded with the patriotic platform. Apparently they have thousands of members. And yet they effectively acted as if they knew nothing about it. And this was a complete surprise, this flash mob demonstration that brought traffic to a standstill. Now, bringing traffic to a standstill isn't too remarkable. Steve Laws has carried out protests there before and the same thing has happened. But the fact that they were all wearing black and wearing masks, I mean, they're wearing masks so that they can't be identified, so that they don't lose their jobs, so that they don't get debanked, so they don't get all of these problems that you get if you're a dissident in modern Britain. And people have been concerned about that, and they've been talking about that on the news, on GB News, on the talk shows. And then last night, there was another protest. And again, it was people all dressed in black with black masks. Pretty certain by now that it's Danny Tomo. And this was at Portsmouth, which is further along the coast, further west along the coast than Dover. And apparently there were 140 illegal immigrants that were being taken there in the middle of the night by two lifeboats. And there were coaches there, posh coaches, ready to pick them up with welcome bags, with shoes and clothing and food and all sorts. And again, 150 or so protesters turned up and were literally in the water, in the sea, preventing this boat from landing. Once again, all dressed in black with black masks on, balaclavas. And people have been saying, well, look, this is obviously some kind of a honeypot. Danny Tomo has been making threats to the government, saying they're going to see what he does, and he's got this army behind him. And yet they haven't been stopped from doing this, when clearly the state must know about it. So you have to think, well, why is the state allowing this to happen? And of course, it may be that it's because they want to ban face coverings. So if they can get people to go out, the far right to go out with face coverings and alarming people, and if they can make it look as if enough people are alarmed by it in the media, of course, I think most people that are politically aware won't be alarmed by it because they will understand why it is that they're doing this. But the general public opinion is not what the mainstream media promotes. It directs public opinion. And then we will direct it into this avenue instead of being, well, this is the British people that are absolutely fed up to the back teeth of illegal immigration. They may promote it as this is terrifying. This is people all dressed in black. It's scaring people. We can't identify them. They look like terrorists. And it may be because the state wants to bring in a law to ban face coverings. Of course, They now have this face recognition technology. And if people are wearing masks, their face recognition technology isn't going to work, is it? So I'm wondering whether that's the reason for this, and that's the reason why nobody's been arrested. I mean, these protests haven't been stopped. I mean, I may be wrong. It may just be that Danny Tomo is not that, maybe he's not that not that bright, basically. So he makes these threats, and he does these things like get people to dress up in black, which is almost like a political uniform, but I guess it's not, because just wearing the same colour doesn't make it a uniform. But it's certainly risky what he's doing. But it is drawing attention to the problem, so we'll have to wait and see what happens there. Of course, what I think people should do if they want to resist is to become a part of the Patriotic Alternative community. And politically, people should vote for Restore, because I think they're the only viable political party that actually promotes our issues. Now, of course, Reform are more likely to win, and Reform have been pushed further to the right by Restore. But the problem is, at the moment, the vote is split between Reform, Restore, and the Tories. I mean, we could see a coalition between all three of them before the next election. But Restore are certainly the closest to being ethno-nationalists. And of course, they can't explicitly say they're ethno-nationalists, because then the state would say, well, that's against the law, because you're talking about excluding other races. So this is why I say that I think Restore Britain is the best that we could ever get from a political party in modern Britain. I mean, talking explicitly about the extent of Jewish power and influence on our politicians, if they were to do something like that, then that would make them unelectable. And again, they'd be accused of anti-Semitism. The mainstream media would be against them even more than they are now. So I don't think you're going to get a political party that talks about subjects like that. The best you're going to get is sort of implicit anti-Semitism. And by that, I mean by being against mass immigration, for instance, by being against kosher slaughter, by being against circumcision, by being against gay marriage, LGBTQ. And you can have political parties that are against these issues that traditionally have had a large Jewish voice backing them, and you can get people that are against them and perhaps against Israel's action in Palestine. But to actually point out the Jewish role in these things, apart from Israel and Palestine, again, I think that makes a party unelectable in the modern world that we live in, unfortunately. I don't think there is a political solution. That's not to get depressed about. I mean, all the while that we have a group of white people that know what the ideals are, know what our history is, know what the point of life is, know that we should be doing what we can for our ethnic group rather than concentrating our lives revolving around what we individually want. So long as we have a group of people, a nucleus within our nations that are nationalists, then we will continue. In the same way, I mean, you could say that even hundreds or so years into the future, if we're a minority within our own country, we'll basically be in the same position that Jews have been in for the last 2,000 years. And they managed to not integrate and to retain their sense of nation. And part of that was the knowledge of their history. And of course, I would say that is much of it is a contested history. But all the same, it's through their sense of being a unique people that has enabled them to survive all that long. And I'm sure that white people could do the same. We just have to have, a nucleus within our nations that understands our true history and the importance of remaining white, effectively. And I'm bringing this all up today because I want to talk a little bit more about Restore. Now, Steve Laws left Restore last week, and this was because of some drama, I believe, with some of the spokeswomen. Orla Minahane from the Pink Ladies apparently voiced support for this woman that killed her three children in America. Now, she's left Restore. She's actually taken down the Pink Ladies Twitter account, and there's somebody else there. I forget what his name is, might be something like Howard Cox, and people aren't very happy with him. And it's always been the same with Restore Britain. There's always been people there that ethno-nationalists are not particularly happy with. But the main criticism that I see that came out last week is Restore Britain came out with a paper. It's called Restore Britain's Philosophy of National Belonging. Now, I've had a good look through this paper, and I want to have a look at it in depth. It'll probably take us more than one podcast to do. And this seems to have upset a lot of people, because he's saying that he's not ethno-nationalist. But you have to bear in mind that to say that he was ethno-nationalist would be electoral suicide, basically. And he has to tread a very fine line in order to keep everything legal, for a start. I think he's gone about it in the right way, and I don't really see why people are so upset about this. And he says he's not ethno-nationalist, and he's not civic nationalist either. And I think that is the best that we're going to get. But if we take an in-depth look at this article, I think we'll understand a little bit more about it. And I think there's been some confusion about it as well. As I say, there's been people resigning their membership of Restore Britain because of this paper. But I think it's a very good paper. I think they've done very well, actually, to separate. They're still separating ethnicity from citizenship, and to try to come up with solutions to our problems that please everybody. And that's something that we do very well as white people. We're very good at coming up with solutions to problems that are suitable for everyone. So this is what Rupert Lowe has to say. As I say, the article is called Restore Britain's Philosophy of National Belonging. He says, there is a serious question at the heart of the immigration debate that our entire political class has spent decades avoiding. Who are the British people? What does that phrase actually mean? And of course, it has two meanings, doesn't it? It could mean somebody that is a British citizen, has a British passport, or it could mean somebody that is of a British ethnicity, by which we mean English, Welsh, Scottish, or Northern Irish. And this has led to a lot of confusion, the fact that British can actually mean two different things. And we even had people trying to claim that just because you have a British passport, that means you're a British ethnicity. But of course, that isn't what it means. For the purposes of government and administration, there has to be a clear and workable answer. This is Restore Britain's position. This is on who are the British people. Citizenship must be the legal boundary. There is no other way. A British citizen is entitled to the protection of the British state and equality before British law. That principle matters, but it leads us to another more daunting conclusion. British citizenship must actually mean something. Our nation is more than an administrative database of passport holders. Britain is an historic national community built over generations through family, place, language, culture, institutions, sacrifice, loyalty, and shared experience. Of course, when he talks about nation there, he's not using the old definition of nation. The old definition of nation is a group of people that are all related together through birth, an extended family. But because we now have separated that from citizenship, the word nation often comes to just mean that the group of people that are living in a certain country. And I think that's what he means here. And he's separating from that the historic national community, which is separate. And effectively, it's the historic national community that really should be referred to as the nation. British citizenship must reflect that as the legal means by which somebody formally joins that community. It should therefore be treated as the most significant thing the British state can grant. A British passport was once considered a prime status symbol, but now, in the wake of the demographic vandalism inflicted on us by successive governments, it has been utterly stripped of its value. It is criminal. No other word for it. Criminal. Politicians from all parties have permitted extraordinary levels of immigration for decades and subsequently granted citizenship on a scale that would once have been considered unthinkable. There are many people who hold a British passport who are not part of our nation in any real sense. They just have a piece of paperwork that says they are. And that is excellent. And the fact that he's saying that shows that a good reason why you should support this party. And whether he says he's ethno-nationalist or not, he's making a distinction there between people who hold a British passport and people who are actually part of our ancestral nation. And he's saying that they're not a part of the nation in any real sense. So he's not saying that they're not a part of the ancestral nation, but he's saying they're not actually part of the civic nation either. They just have a piece of paperwork that says they are. Our criticism is not necessarily directed at those who have lawfully and legitimately received British citizenship. It is of the traitorous governments that make such decisions and allowed that to happen on such a vast scale. Restore Britain believes the threshold for acquiring British citizenship has been far too low. Living here for a comparatively short period should not make citizenship an almost automatic administrative conclusion, as is currently the case. Under a Restore Britain government, British citizenship will be granted only in the most minuscule numbers and only through marriage, subject to strict fraud checks. British citizenship will represent deep allegiance, genuine belonging, good character, the highest proficiency in the English language, and a substantial commitment to Britain. And this is the first criticism that people have had, or one of the first criticism that comes up in this document, rather, I should say. And that's when people have been saying, oh, well, that means Abdul can still marry Fatima. Well, as it says here, Abdul can only marry Fatima if they have not been arrested for any fraud. There's no fraud being involved. It's a genuine marriage. They have good character, i.e. the person wanting to get married does not have any criminal record. The highest proficiency in the English language, which means that obviously they're going to be a very good English speaker. And a substantial commitment to Britain, which means that they will obviously have to be working. And that basically would probably prevent about 50% of the people of foreign ancestry that are in Britain. It probably prevent about 50% of them from being able to marry somebody from abroad, which is a good start. Of course, people are criticizing this, saying, oh, yes, well, it still means that they'll be able to marry people from Pakistan. Not if they don't fulfill all of these criteria. And these criteria, if they're strictly enforced, as I say, it will mean at least 50% of them would not be able to get married. Don't forget, a large proportion of them are already married. And would they want to stay in Britain under what Restore Britain have termed a hostile policy towards immigration? Again, it's very similar to what PA say about creating an environment where people would want to voluntarily leave, effectively. And that would substantially reduce the numbers here. But it goes into more detail about how they're going to reduce the numbers here later on. Citizenship will once again become the legal boundary for being British, with its holders entitled to the protection of the British state and equality before British law. But until the raging demographic fire is brought under control, the pipeline must close almost entirely. So they're saying nobody else is going to be granted citizenship at all. And I think everybody would agree that if you are a British citizen, then you are entitled to equality under British law, and you should be entitled to the protections that you get under British law. If you're not a citizen of Britain, then why should you be entitled to these British protections? And I think that is something that is implied here, that if you're not a British citizen, you are not entitled to the same things that the British people have, because they want citizenship to actually mean something. There is also an important distinction between citizenship and identity. And of course, as ethno-nationalists, we would say, well, that's ethnicity. That's the difference. It's the extended family. And you cannot integrate into an extended family. Either you are a part of that family or you are not. You cannot change who your ancestors were. The state can issue a citizenship certificate. It has certainly proven that. It cannot manufacture belonging overnight. It is impossible to fake that. And I would say that belonging, you only belong in a family if you're actually from that family. It's not possible for you to join it. Of course, in the past, they might say, well, you could adopt somebody into your family. And there might have been the odd person that came from another country that would be adopted into the English nation. And if they were part of one of the brother nations, effectively, if they were white, then within a couple of generations, it would make no difference. But you cannot have a black person belonging in a white nation, can you? Because they're black. They have their own nation that they belong to. As I say, I think the best you're going to get politically is someone making this distinction, saying that it doesn't mean belonging. Just because someone has a citizenship, it doesn't mean that they belong with the British nations. Someone can acquire British citizenship in law without instantly acquiring the same relationship with Britain as somebody whose entire life or whose family's lives over generations has been rooted here. This is just an observable fact. Well, I would say the reason why they cannot acquire that same relationship is because they're not a part of the ancestral family, are they? They can never acquire that same relationship with Britain because they're not actually part of the, they don't share the same ancestors. I mean, what he's pointing out here is he's referring to the country itself, Britain, rather than the British nations. But clearly somebody who has just come here in the last 70 years, someone whose family has just come here in the same 70 years, they're not going to have the same relationship with Britain as somebody whose family have been here since the Norman invasion, for example. He then says, but I reject the two extremes. I reject the proposition that Britishness is exclusively racial. Now, this probably goes back to the old terminology of race, and race effectively could be used interchangeably with nation. So you could say that Britishness is not exclusively racial because the Normans came over and they became British, the Saxons came over, they became British, the Flemings came over, they became British, the Huguenots came over, they became British. So that's the origin of this proposition here, that Britishness is not exclusively racial. In fact, there's a book by an author called Beddoe, I think it was early 1900s, and it's called The Races of Britain. And it effectively describes all the different white nations that came into Britain and then became a part of the British nations. So when he's saying, I reject the proposition that Britishness is exclusively racial, if you're going to use the term race to mean the same as nation, so you're going to say a race of the Irish, a race of Scots, a race of Germans. And that's correct. Britishness is not exclusively racial. But if you're going to be talking about other racial groups like sub-Saharan Africans, Britishness is exclusive of sub-Saharan Africans because Britishness is an ethnicity. Just the same as if you're a Somalian, being a Somali is exclusive to Somalians. You couldn't have a white Englishman, for instance, claiming to be Somali, because Somali is an ethnicity. So that's the difference here. So he's saying he rejects the proposition that Britishness is exclusively racial. And again, that's using the sort of terminology that you would expect the political class to have to use. I mean, he couldn't say, oh, I think British people are exclusively white, everyone else is excluded, for instance. They would say, well, you're discriminating against people in that case, and you are seeking to remove their rights from them based on their race. And if you do that, then under the Conservative government's definition of extremism, that makes you an extremist. Therefore, we have to ban your political party. So there are reasons why he puts this in terminology like that, I think. It's very clever, the terminology that he uses. He then says, I also reject the proposition that Britain is merely an economic zone, a hotel or a business, and that anyone in the world can become indistinguishable from our historic national community simply through an administrative process. So again, he's saying, just because you've been given this passport, it doesn't mean you are part of the historic national community. You are something separate. You are simply a British citizen. You're not a part of the historic national community. And that cannot be changed simply through an administrative process. He says, Britain has undergone enormous and unacceptable demographic change as a consequence of mass immigration. We can all use our eyes. We can see what has happened. Communities replaced. And yes, replaced is the correct word. That is a process that must be reversed while acknowledging the genuine and practical obstacles that we are facing. Again, this is very good. Replacement migration is what it is called. That's what the UN called it. A great replacement is another term that has been used. And just even using the term replacement can get you called an extremist or a conspiracy theorist by the mainstream media. And yet here we have an elected politician telling us that this is the correct word to use. And it is the correct word to use, and I fully support him in this. We should be able to discuss the scale, speed, and consequences of that transformation openly, using demographic evidence. And again, when people do this, they get accused of being racist or alarmist or faking the figures. I mean, it did used to be said that by 2064, we would be a minority in our own country. Yet because of the rapid changes and the speed of that immigration, it's now looking like it's going to be somewhere in the 2050s, because the estimate of it being 2064 was made probably about 10 years ago now. And since that time, the actual speed of the immigration has increased. We need to be discussing this, and we need the demographic evidence, accurate evidence that we can use to do this. Because England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland are not administrative units on a spreadsheet, they contain historic communities with identities, traditions, and connections to place stretching back generations. Again, very good. He's talking about historic communities. Rather than talking about ethnicity, rather than talking about race, he's talking about a historic community. And there's plausible deniability there, isn't it? Because you could say, oh, well, a historic community, it may have had an odd black person in there. So it's not discriminating against black people. Again, it's the correct sort of language to use, historic communities, with identities, traditions, and connections to place stretching back generations. Not saying that these people are just here by accident or by accident of birth. Their ancestors deliberately chose somebody from the same group that they were from in order to, for that group to continue. That's identity that goes, that stretches back generations. He's also talking about the connection that these people have, these families that have been here for centuries, the connections that they actually have to Britain. Roots, deep, deep, deep roots, meaningful roots. He says, and of course, that's talking about a family tree. What is a family tree? Well, the family tree shows all the ways that you are connected to your nation, effectively. And I always find this word roots interesting. Black people like to talk about roots and culture, don't they? And I don't really see that that is very different from blood and soil. Roots and culture, blood and soil. It's the same thing. Everybody is concerned about their people group, and they're concerned about their country. It shouldn't be that nationalism, ethno-nationalism, is seen as something that only white people have. I mean, the more I look around the world, the more I look at these different groups, you can see that they all have their own form of ethno-nationalism. Obviously, Rupert Lowe cannot use that term, ethno-nationalism. But the fact that he's talking about roots and historic communities and identity, I mean, this shows that it is pretty much ethno-nationalism that just doesn't call itself ethno-nationalism. It talks about historic communities rather than ethnicities. English, Welsh, Scottish, and Northern Irish ethnic identities exist, reflecting generations of connection to a particular part of these islands. There should be nothing shameful about acknowledging that. Well, there should be nothing shameful about advocating for them either, which I would hope that Restore would do. I would hope they would become more open about advocating specifically for these ethnic identities. Citizenship determines legal membership of the state. Ethnicity, culture, ancestry, and belonging describe different aspects of our identity. Again, it's drawing a clear distinction between citizenship and identity. It's two separate things. The passport that you have does not determine who you are. What determines who you are is your ancestry, which is what it says here, ancestry, which is of course ethnicity And culture is a part of that, because the unique cultures are effectively created by individual ethnicities. They create their own culture, and the ethnicity itself is linked to ancestry. Ethnicity is a shared language, a shared religion, and a shared ancestry. Nothing to do with what your passport says. National identity and ancestral continuity are not the same thing. Well, it should be. And this is the bit where I say the word nation, national, it originates with natal, which means birth, which means a people of shared birth, essentially. But because of this modern terminology, this modern definition of nation as meaning the people group that live in a distinct country, that's why he's having to say here, national identity and ancestral continuity are not the same thing. Because in modern terminology, the nation is just a people group that lives within the territory of a country. And that's why he's having to make this distinction. And also that's why he's saying that he's not ethno-nationalist, because he's saying he's what he's interested in is ancestral continuity rather than ethno-nationalism. But that is what ethno-nationalism is ancestral continuity. Someone can possess all the hallmarks of English national identity without descending from England's historic population. And of course, that's when you get people that are Anglophiles, and they've come to live over here and they think very highly of the English people. Now, I wouldn't say that they could have this English national identity, because I would say that the nation means ethnicity. But what he's saying here, where he's pointed out that national identity and ancestral continuity are not the same thing, then under that definition, then you can have people that aren't ethnically English that have an English national identity, because he is saying that national identity is not ancestral continuity. It's just people that live within the certain boundaries of a territory. So if you take that as the definition, then you could have somebody who is non-white claiming to be English. And of course, we do get that. We've had people like David Lammy claiming to be English. And that's wrong, because he's not English, because English is an ethnic group. But what he's saying here is that English is a national identity as well as an ancestral continuity, but they're not actually the same thing. So there are two definitions for the same word, which is a little bit confusing, but it means that he can deny that he's ethno-nationalist, effectively. And it means that he can deny that he's discriminating against anybody. He says, both realities can and should be recognised. English identity can be shared more broadly, while England's historic population remains a distinct subject of demographic security, and the same principle applies across the United Kingdom. So he's making a distinction between people that say they're English because they were born in England, and people that say they're English because they're part of the historic population. And he's not making that distinction based on race. He's making that distinction based upon them being a part of the historic population. So by doing that, he avoids the accusation of discriminating against people based on race. And it's a good thing that he does this as well, because some people may not have even thought about it in this way. But that's the way that it is. It's the historic population that is important. That's what needs preserving. That's what the ethnicity is. And the group of these different ethnicities, a group of these different historic populations, largely become the race, effectively. They are a part of the race. So we've got to page 4 here, and there are 13 pages, so it's probably going to take 3 episodes to get through this. So I will pause that there, and we'll get back into it again tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening. God bless, and hail victory.